Hey, yeah. So, Mark, this is Bill Way. He's the CEO and president here. Great guy. Been in the industry now for 31 years, so very, very knowledgeable in the bending world, and someone I've had the great honor and privilege of working with. And like I said, he's just really, really well versed in what we're doing. He's kind of the mastermind with the micro markets, and someone that's quite a bit of knowledge. And Bill, this is Mark. He is obviously he's in the Woodlands area of Texas, and really what piqued his interest was he wants to retire in 5 years, ideally. He's bought in businesses in the past for a private equity group, and his goal was $100,000, which I told him was very achievable with what we're doing. He was looking for something that he could, you know, was fairly easy, just one time a week where he's got to check off on it. So not a whole lot of, you know, not super time consuming. That's kind of piqued his interest and, you know, brought him our way, and something that's in a close proximity to the Woodland Hills area. So that's Mark, this is Bill. Bill, this is Mark.
Hey, Mark, it's great to meet you.
Yeah,
sounds
nice
like we have a lot
you.
In common, too.
Yeah,
sounds
I
like we like the same thing.
Appreciate it. Yeah, that's exactly right. I appreciated all the email, the information was sent over. I went through them over the weekend. Pretty interesting stuff. I read through a lot of the material. So anyway, yeah, as I said, it's of an interest to me.
Well, great. James is responsible for getting that to you, but I'm responsible for composing it. So we appreciate your kind words. Thank you. So the Woodlands I've been to, that's in the North Houston area, right?
Yeah, just north of the airport.
Yeah, north of 99 up there. Yeah, nice area.
It's a nice area.
And you're sort of on the edge of a lot of commercial as you move south from there, too.
That's right. Actually, now I'm a couple years ago, I built a place even a little north of there by Lake Conroe, west of the Conroe area, which now everything's moving up this way. This area, by all accounts, is one of the fastest growing in the U.S.
Yeah, it's so, well located. Yeah, it's near Hobby, you said, right?
No, Intercontinental on the north side.
Intercontinental, I'm sorry. Hobby's the one. I've flown into both of them many times, but I usually fly into Hobby, and that's where my brain goes. Okay.
I'm a long term, so I don't use the. It's really Bush, George Bush. They renamed it George Bush Airport.
They renamed it
Intercontinental. Yeah. So we're up here.
Yeah. So that's a great area. You're near a lot of area that's great for development. So tell me, if you would, while I'm thinking of it, what would you consider to be the zip code or a center point of the area you'd like to develop? I'd just like to do a quick review of what the opportunity is and how, you know, look over our territory charts.
Yeah.
Is your zip code in an area that has commercial around it, or would you need to go south?
No, it is. Yeah. My zip code right here where I am is 77304. As I say, I've gone a little bit north. Where it's really expanding here. I'm kind of in the Conroe area. But the one in the Woodlands, the office that in Market Street in the Woodlands where I work out of is 77380.
So you work out of the Woodlands area?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what do you do now?
For a number of years, I'm a CFO with a private equity group, and we're wrapping up some of the big projects we've been doing on. They fund big projects. It's mostly oil and gas based. That's what most of my background is. And we're kind of winding down several projects. And in the past, I've kind of stayed on with some of the companies as we put them together. And now in between looking at the next thing to do. So as I said, I'm kind of looking to develop my own business stuff where I can kind of curtail it back to just consulting. And then, and then pull it out where I can basically retire in a few years and just have my own income.
Yeah.
Going.
Well, that's a good plan. And it's nice to it's nice to be able to afford to retire. Whether you choose to or not is your decision. You might like what you're doing and making so much money, you might not want to, but it's nice to be able to, and it's nice to not have to work crazy hours either.
Well, that's kind of what I'm after. I started on a plan last year to buy a business a year for the next few years, at least one. Last year I bought the first one. I bought a very interesting, bought an exotic hunting ranch out in central West Texas. And
what was it again?
Very good.
I couldn't understand. I couldn't hear
hunting
you.
Ranch.
Oh,
it's
hunting
ranch.
Okay.
Native whitetail and turkey, but then it's a high fence ranch, so it's exotics. So it's really a year-round operation. And had a good opportunity to get into that one, and I have three boys, and we just were kind of tired of paying to go hunt. So the first thing was I just wanted to kind of invest in something. I didn't know it would be that large of a operation. So I'm kind of using that to develop and use it to entertain customers and clients and other businesses too, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really been a good one. And the big thing there was real estate investment. It just doesn't go down in Texas. It continues to go up and up for ranch property. So that was the first one I did. And so now I'm looking at doing some others.
Yeah, I love real estate. I've been involved in real estate my whole life. I started as a builder and land developer, and then got into a lot of commercial and also then rentals and all that over the years. So have you been in business before? Have you owned a business, operated a business before?
Yes, I have. In fact, when I grew up, my family, that's all we did, family operated businesses. And most of it was construction specialty related, something to do with the oil field, one way or the other. Of course, a lot of people from Texas are like that, but that's
most
of my background.
Yeah. Oh, my dad used to be president of Gulf States Asphalt in Houston, and he's been in the oil industry a long time. So I understand that business, and certainly out in Texas, there's a lot of that. I was a little interested in what you said about your idea to buy a business a year, because frankly, that sounds exhausting. I don't know that I'd want to do that unless I was a passive, non-manager, and not had it was just a pure investment or something. But
of course, that's my goal. Is of course, I guess that's everybody's goal, to make them as absentee as you can. So I didn't, and I found after a year and a half or so on the ranch, now I'm getting it to that point. I'm getting it to the point where I have somebody local there, and then that can mostly manage it. So that's what I'm after, is trying to get them to a point of absentee. I've looked at a lot of different businesses. Since financial and accounting is my background, almost get into them where people are like, we haven't kept our books straight. We're behind on our tax returns. You almost problem type situations. And it's just not the ones I'm looking at. It's with the private equity stuff I've done. So many companies we bought were the same way, family.
Yeah. So you bought them for a private equity investor, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So. In this particular case, I'm trying to do it just for me. I'm not trying to do it for any other investor or help them. I'm doing it just for me at this point. Yeah.
I hear you. And as you can see, this is very scalable, and it's also something where you can be the manager and the visionary. It's easy to hire people to outsource servicing and things that aren't your best use of your time. I could ramble on with all kinds of information, but maybe would you like – is there something you'd like to discuss or questions you have that you want to – discuss first?
I didn't have any specific questions. I guess the one thing I would say is I've been looking at a lot of ads. I look at a lot of stuff that's out there for business for sale. That's how I stumbled across it. And when I first saw it, it looked to advertise a little bit like it was 10. It was like a it was already locations established, and like there were 10 in place in Houston. But I kind of get the feel that that's not the case. The case is it's to be developed. It's the opportunity to develop locations in this area. Is that right?
Right. That's basically it. But we do. So let me give you the short version. What I think is important for you to know at this point. So, and you don't know. I assume you don't know me. You've never heard of my company before. Is that safe to assume?
That's correct. Until I got the materials and started going through it, then I did a little bit of research. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so here's what I'm all about. So about 5% of my business is brokering established businesses, but I only broker vending businesses. That's my specialty. And furthermore, I only broker certain types of vending businesses that I've learned are the most profitable business models. And the reason for that is because I've been in business 47 years, but over the last 31 years, I've developed a specialty in vending. And I was attracted to it because of some of the obvious benefits like automation, you know, and less employees and better, you know, less capital requirements and higher ROIs, all kinds of things that you're probably seeing already. So anyway, that's the reason for the specialty. But about 90% of my business is setting up new vending routes or now micro markets around the U.S. And the reason when I do broker a business, I only broker them if I can get the seller to price them as if I was setting up a new one. Now, most of the time, if they have all the income documented, they want 2 or 3 times annual gross profit. And usually that price is so much higher than what I could build a new one for, it just doesn't make any sense. And I would not do it myself. So if I wouldn't invest in it, I'm not going to list it. So what I've gotten really good at is setting up, I find a business model that's really profitable, and then I create a sort of a cookie cutter approach where I can roll it out throughout the U.S. So that's what we have right now. Now, you know enough about business, Mark, that you know you can't see these kind of returns that we're getting by buying an established business. Because if it's all documented and it's all, you know, they're going to want too much money for it. So
right, every time.
I've been criticized by my peers for leaving so much money on the table because they claim, you know, they tell me that I could be charging a lot more. But I believe in creating massive value in the world and sharing opportunity, and I do well. I don't need to – I like money, but I don't need more just – you know, I'm more motivated by creating value and helping people and so on and having and enjoying the process. So what this is we have a, as you might imagine, 31 years in the industry, I'm pretty in tune with where the trends are, and I have connections and really all over the world with different technologies, and, you know, I import and whatnot. So anyway, the last 3.5 years, we've been working on a way to create a micro market for smaller businesses because that's the trend. And right now we're the only company in the United States that offers anything that works in a business under 300 employees. 20 to 100 employees is the sweet spot, but up to 200. And there's literally no one. You could spend all day tomorrow Googling it and making phone calls. You will not find anyone in the United States. So it's a massive opportunity with a very high return, but it takes somebody who's as much an entrepreneur as an investor, because, you know, you got to be able to see opportunity. So how do you see yourself? I mean, are you an entrepreneur or are you an investor or both?
Well, in the past I've been both. But actually I'm seeing myself more as an entrepreneur now, meaning that the business stuff I'm looking at, I want to take it. And what you just said is what the model I've always worked around and the guys I work around are, is building value, taking something. I mean, two people can take the same thing and create completely different values around them. And so
right.
That's what we do in enterprises, and that's what I'm about, is taking something and increasing that value. So that's the part of it that appeals to me.
Well, that's great that we're on the same page. In fact, I have a three-point philosophy in business that I like money. I like, it's more money is better. A lot of fun things you can do with money, a lot of good in the world. But I focus first on creating value and opportunity. And then number two, I focus on having fun, because if it isn't fun, I won't do it, and neither will you. And I found that making money is the unavoidable consequence of the first two, which I'm good with. I like it. It just, mm-hmm. I don't like it making money to be the main thing, because everybody's priorities change. So we're saying the same thing. That's great.
Right.
So what is it that you like about this? Does this look like something that might work for you?
Yeah, I think so, based on what I'm hearing. And that, I guess it kind of came down to that. That's my, that would be my discussion, or my number one discussion point in this, is the locations. How do you go about locating? Do you have people that are already requesting at their locations? If your target is hitting companies with less than 300 employees, are you already marketing for those folks and have them responding? Or is that that work?
We have a whole system for how we roll these out. So, for example, I'm going to do this in real time right now. If I look at your zip code 77380, that looks like the center of that is south of the Woodlands, between the Woodlands and Spring, Texas. So if I draw I subscribe to a database where we have access to every business in the United States, and it's updated once a year by telephone, so it's all confirmed and current. So I'm logged into my database right now, and if I take that as a center point, draw a radius of 10 miles, 20 miles across, there are 28,640 total businesses. Well, that's a lot of businesses, but most of them don't meet our criteria, and also there's no reason to spread out that far. So if you're with me so far, what I'm going to do is just I'm going to make the area smaller, and then I'm going to filter it. Does that make sense, what I'm doing here?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking the same zip, and then I'm, clearing the search, and I'm changing it now to 3 miles, just for grins, and see how that changes it. What number did I just say? Like 28,000, right?
Good.
So if I make it 3 miles, there are 4,986 businesses. So now if I take that and I'm going to go over here and I'm going to filter it by the most obvious first thing to filter by, so numbers of employees. I'm going to go 20 to 100 employees and update. In that 3 mile radius, there are, it's loading, it's thinking, 20 to 100 employees, 3 mile radius from that zip code. So 4,900, that drops it down to 272 businesses that have between 20 and 100 employees in that tight 3 mile radius. Now, if we were going to actually move forward and do this, and you wanted to say you want to start with 10 locations, I would go through and filter it further. So do you know what, for example, do you know what SIC codes are? Standard Industrial Classification Code. Do you? Okay, so. So I can eliminate certain businesses by the type of business. So, for example, we don't want McDonald's and Burger King, because they might have 80 employees, but they're not going to. That's not a good place to put a micro market, right? They make food. So that list, if I work on it, I'll probably filter it down to around 200 or so. And then when I get the list built the way I want it, then I can download the list. So, for example, I'm going to look at the list right now and see what I got. You'll recognize some of these businesses, I'm sure. Like ABS Nautical Systems. You ever heard of them? AEG Fuels, Afton Inc., all my sons moving in storage.
Right.
These are all, have you heard of any of those?
Yes.
Allen Hamburg Dental. So each one of these has between 20 and 100 employees. So when I download the list, the data that I get is not only, you know, obviously name, address, phone number. I also get at least one and up to three contact people and their titles. And we get when they started business, how long they've been in the database, their website. I mean, we know all about them. So then what I do is I send that list to we have a locating team. All they do all day long is about 15 people that will take these targeted lists and call the businesses, and they will obtain the location. So what you get is it's a confirmed location. So I guess I need to digress. If you want to do your own locating, which I don't recommend at least to start, I can give you the list and you can contact them, and we'll teach you how to do it. But what we normally do is send the list to my team, who calls them and secures a location. So they're only going to call the companies on the list. So we already know that any business that says yes is going to be a good location, because we know what they do and how many employees they have. Is that right? Logical to that point?
Right.
Does that make sense? Am I making this clear, Mark?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. So any one of which that says yes is going to be a great location. So that's how we do it. And as you can see, it's a fairly massive market, because keep in mind, all these businesses, if you had the list and you called them, well, what do you think they would say if you asked them, how would you like a micro market for your break room? That's kind of a trick question, but yeah, what do you think? I mean, they're gonna say what's a micro market. Most of them don't know what that means.
Right.
So you know what they are. We clear enough what they are, right?
Right.
Okay. So once we tell them what it is, their reaction is generally that now they know what it is. Well, they all want it. They all want it. If I call them, I can get 8 out of 10, and the only reason I don't get all of them is because some of them won't stop and listen. They're busy or they don't pay attention. But they all prefer a micro market to a vending operation. So they're all going to have vending in the break room, all of them. So if you contact businesses with more than 300 employees, certainly more than 500 employees, they're all going to already have micro markets. And the competition for those is fierce. So we have the only system that's profitable in a location of that size range, and no competition. So if I'm making this clear, I think you can see that this is very high demand business model and very scalable. You know, and it's just efficient to start close to home and fan out. There's no reason to spread a route over, you know, throughout the entire Houston area, for example, if you can be 3 miles from home. And by the way, if we have if I build a list, say, down to I filter it, and we end up with 200 locations in within a 3 mile radius, we can generally get up to 25% of those with our first marketing effort pretty easily. So that means within 3 miles of that center point you gave me, that we should be able to get 60 or 70 locations fairly quickly. And you're not going to start with that many. You're going to start probably with less than that.
Right.
So I'll stop my rant here. Yeah. Have any questions or comments?
No, and that's, again, you went just south of here, the Woodlands area, kind of the north of here, where I am, you can see more expansion than what I would say is a little more industrial and plant locations, and some of those might even be better suited, you know, employee-wise.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes with if you go just south of the Woodlands in the Spring area, like you were saying. So some of these outlying areas might even be, you know, might even be better as far as some of the companies you could pull up. And they're growing new ones all the time.
Yeah. Well, we can certainly, you know, we can go anywhere you want, but we, as long as we're careful with territory assignment. So we create a territory, but then we won't put too many people in a territory, but you're free to go outside the territory if you want to. But, we're, you know, right now we don't have anyone in the North, Houston area. We've got people down in like Sugar Land and Missouri City and down that way. South Houston.
Right.
So that's a good area. So
right.
If you want, I can look at those areas too. We can see what's there.
Right.
At this point, I don't know if that's helpful, but I mainly just wanted to get a point. The answer to your question, how we do it, it's very targeted and, you know, there's no reason to contact every business when we can find out which ones are profitable and just call them. And it's very efficient to do it over the phone.
And then, when you target things, you put basically the same, you put basically the same setup in every location.
Yes, and then the idea is, you know, business 101 is to the smallest capital investment to create the highest, you know, return. So we don't want to put in more than we need to, but once we're in the door, if the sales justify it, we add another cooler or a bigger cooler and another rack, and you know there are other things we can add. We can add more inventory is my point. So we want servicing to be once a week, and I say once to twice a week because in reality what happens is if sales are so high that your current refrigeration and racks require a second service call, that's a good problem because that means you're selling a lot and you're making a lot of money. But on the other hand, it's not efficient to have to make more than one service call. So when that happens, we add more refrigeration or shelving as necessary to get it back to one service call a week.
Right.
So by the time you have to add equipment or fixtures, the return, the cash flow is great, and you can do that out of profit. You don't have to invest more capital.
Right. Right.
Now, another thing that happens, ramble too much, but one question that you might not think to ask, but this is what happens, is remember, all businesses of that size typically have vending machines. So they do sometimes, I mean, we set up router operators with new vending machines and they go out for those locations. But the way we get them is they're usually if we get them at all, it's because they're dissatisfied with their service or the equipment is old or not up to date. That's why they're looking to upgrade their break room equipment. Does that make sense?
Right.
So we still have those people that will go for a micro market, but on top of that, they all prefer a micro market, and they all don't think they can get one. If they know what it is, they think it's not available because no one has it. So they all want it. So it pretty much opens up the whole area. But still, here's what happens. Say they're happy with their current vendor, they just prefer a micro market. And they don't want to kick the guy out when they don't even know for sure what they're going to get yet. So we'll go in there and we'll put in a small setup of a rack and cooler, and they may leave their vending machines for a while. But we don't even care because we know that in break room environments that 70% of people will not even use a vending machine. So the minute we put in a micro market, they all use it. And even the ones that would have used the vending prefer the micro market. So we get a lot of sales. If we didn't ever kick out the vending machines, it wouldn't even matter. They would take their machines out on their own because their sales would drop so much it wouldn't be profitable for them. But eventually what happens is they remove the vending machines, and then that creates more space as well. So sometimes space is an issue, and sometimes we can't put in a bigger setup until they remove their vending machines. So it's kind of a multi-step process often. We put in a small unit to get in the door, and then we expand when and if necessary. Is that's the short answer there? But that, I gave you some detail as to what happened.
Right.
So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's the concept's easy enough to understand. These operate cash or credit card, right?
No, I'm glad you brought that up. I would have covered that at some point. But see, here's another factor. So have you ever seen a micromarket anywhere in a big break room or airport?
I was going to ask. I saw I've seen a couple of them, and I saw one at a hospital over here locally. In fact, it was to the point that after hours, employees were the only ones that could use it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, it was their like badge. They use their badge for all the operations.
Scan the badge.
Yeah.
Right, and they probably had a lot of employees. So there's a lot of ways that they're done. And now that example, I'm guessing they probably had either a kiosk or they scanned a credit card or something for payment.
Right. Right.
So did they have a kiosk or do you remember?
Yes, they had a kiosk.
Okay, and I'm getting probably one. That's most common. So here's what happens. Those kiosks cost about $1,500 a piece, and some of them take only credit cards or set up accounts, and some of them take cash and credit. So here's what we found: if we put in a kiosk that takes cash or credit, so about 20% will use cash. If we take away the cash and we put in a kiosk that only takes credit cards, the sales don't go down. The ones that would have used cash just use a credit card instead. So it does not affect sales at all. The next thing that happens is, say you got two kiosks and then it's break time and you got 50 people on their lunch break all at the same time buying stuff, and now they're standing in line at the kiosk waiting. Well, you can imagine how that's going to go over. You know, some people just won't get in line and wait. They're too busy, so they just leave and they just don't buy anything.
Right.
Makes sense? Logically, and that's what happens. So it creates backlogs. It's like the weak link in the chain. You got all this product, but they can't buy it because there's only two kiosks. And at $1,500 a piece, how many can you put out? You know, how much makes sense? So usually there's not more than two unless it's a pretty big operation. And even if there's three, it's the same problem. So what we do is we have an app payment system. So Mark, how many people do you know in the workplace in this day and age that don't have a smartphone? Pretty much they all have smartphones, right?
Yeah, hardly anybody, right?
Pretty much anybody that's at least if they're of an age where they're working, going to an office or any kind of break room. So and they all have data plans. So what we do is we and they're all used to downloading apps. They don't want to have to download more than they need or too many, but if they're working somewhere where they need the app to pay for their snacks and whatnot, they'll do it. So what we do is when we set it up, we have an open house. We give everybody a code for a free it's a little printed card with a code that's good for a week. And when they download the app and activate it and set up their account, they get $5 free, worth free purchases. So the first $5 is on us if they do it within a week. So that gives them the incentive to not drag their feet and get it done, and now they're set up to make purchases. So we run all the purchases through the app, all of them, and what the obvious benefit is, the first benefit is we save $1,500 per kiosk, which makes it, that's one of the reasons it's practical to put it in smaller businesses, is because we save that cost. But the second one that's not as obvious, unless you know the business, is that every user's cell phone is the point of purchase. So there's no possibility of a line. So you could literally have 50 people making a purchase at the exact same moment, and all of their purchases would be processed. There's no limit to how many can be going on concurrently. You see the advantage there?
Yeah, I
understand. So it's a simple and easy system. People love it. Got a guy in L.A. that's got 40 of these set up that's does it this way, only app payment, and it's working great. It's just a great system. Now, and it's all, you know, tracked in real time. So it's cashless, and your money, at any time in real time, you can log onto your account and look at your sales for each vending location individually or total. And at any time you want the cash, you can transfer it from that account to your bank account. You can do it every day if you want, once a week, whenever you want.
Right.
And it's soon.
So what do you do? What do you do in the case of like a visitor or somebody that may come through? Are they just not able to use, since they don't have an app, or is it fairly easy to app at that point?
Well, it's very simple to get the app on the market. It says download the app, and it's simple to download and do it. So that's one way. Or another way is if they're a guest. I mean, the business might may well just buy it for them.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I got you.
And
yeah.
But mostly the users are the same people, which makes it very efficient. We don't put it in places where it has public access or a lot of different users, because then we have more of a problem with theft. So all micro markets
right.
have that issue, and yet they're a very popular business model. So it's manageable. It's just that it's problematic. You can't put it in public places. You can't put it in an airport, for example, unless you've got a live person looking over it.
Right.
So, and there are you might have seen at some places in airports, there are some stores that will have a live person behind the counter, and then they'll have some items sold to a micro market just so that people don't have to stand in line.
No,
but then they have a kiosk. They have cameras, and they have scanners, and they have people overlooking what's going on. But the technology is a lot more expensive. There's also technology that locks it down. So, like, with some technologies, you can't – the doors and the access is not available until you first – scan your card or activate your account, and that unlocks the door, and then they know who you are.
Yeah, that's
so those can be put in public. Say again?
When I saw it at the hospital, that's exactly the way it was set up.
So it had a door lock?
At the door. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you unlock. Yep. There's a big company that does that. And then they put everything in the cooler, even if it doesn't need to be refrigerated. It just makes it easier.
Yep.
You can even put bagged snacks in the cooler if you want. Or you can create a box that's not cooled that also has a door lock. There's all kinds of technology. So we've evaluated, what's the best way to go about this to tap into the biggest market with the biggest opportunity with the lowest cost for technology.
Right.
For example, if you have a fresh food or frozen food, generally we put a health lock on there. Which what that does is if the if something happens as a power failure and the refrigeration drops below a certain level where the food could perish, if it drops before a certain level for a certain amount of time, the door will lock and it won't let anybody access it until it's
right.
The freshness is so there's a lot of technology, but a lot of it's not needed for what we do.
Yeah, so I kind of get the process. So the prices that you had out there, and I went through the spreadsheet and I saw all the numbers and everything. That's is that based on kind of, because I think you used 10 locations. Is that based on kind of an average or kind of what you target starting point?
I love the questions you ask. You ask all the right questions, and based on your background, I'd be disappointed if you didn't. it's not really an average. It's based on known data. So, do you have that in front of you now, or if not, it's okay. But do you? The spreadsheet.
I can pull it up. I can pull it up. So, give me just a second.
Okay. Well,
go ahead. I'll be pulling it up.
Okay, I've got it in front of me. I just pull it up. So when you get to it, look at line 42 where it says monthly operating income and expense. And I'll show you how these numbers are all understated, and I'm going to show you why in just a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so you're on line 42 there?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. So see on the next line, 43, so it's based on 20 employees. 20 is the lowest number that we ever go with. As a practical matter, you're probably going to have an average of higher, a lot higher than 20, because we're going to do 20 to 100. But I like to understate things, and I like things to turn out better than expected. Much better to underpromise and overdeliver. I'm sure you can agree with that.
Yeah.
So if we know how many employees there are, which we always do, it's known what the average purchases are. We know 20 employees are going to buy so many canned drinks a day, so many bottled drinks a day, so many frappuccinos or more specialty drinks, how many bagged chips. If we offer pastries, how much of that they're going to buy. We know what they're going to buy. There are two surveys done nationally businesses are surveyed. So it's fairly well known. And if you look in my book on the chapter Location Targeting and Analysis, that's covered there. So $4.27 a day per employee is based on only selling cold drinks and snacks. It's not based on any and pastry, like Hostess kind of pastries, Entenmann's. There are no fresh food sales. There's no salads. There's no sandwiches, no coffee. That's typically the average for a vending operation, $4.27 a day.
Okay.
Now, but keep in mind, this is not vending. It's micromarket. And we know also that 70% of people won't use a vending machine. So, again, these averages are higher because it's a micromarket, and I'm using vending data.
Right.
And so anyway, it's higher for that reason, and it's higher because we're going to have more than 20 employees. But even still, that works out to $1,700 a month per location in gross sales. And realistically, it should be much higher than that. But even if that's all it is, then look how it comes out. If you look at all the other numbers and question them, well, how real are they? They're all real. They're all realistic, understated, and I can pick any one of them, and I'll share with you why it is, and you can comment. If you don't have a particular one you want to talk about, I would suggest we talk about one in particular.
Okay.
You want me to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, so shrinkage is on line 44. Well, that means everything that's not accounted for, whether it's due to mistakes or theft or whatever. And we found we can keep it under 5%. So we expect 5% of sales to disappear somehow. If it's over 5%, we have agreements with the location that if it's over 5%, we bill them for it. So if we're $100 over, where it's an 85-40 shrinkage? If actual shrinkage is 185, we're going to bill the location at $100. And part of the justification for that is, first of all, they want the service, and they're not paying us for it, and they're not getting a commission. They just want it because it's better for their employees. And we have security measures, but they have more control over it than we do in one respect. If they're getting billed and they know this is a problem, they can go to their employees and they can say, hey, look, you need to pay for what you're taking, and we're finding shortages. And if you get caught stealing, you're fired. We want them to have the incentive to do that, right? So we want them to help us. And if they don't care, they can just keep paying the difference if it's over 5%. But we have some other ways we keep it under 5%. One of them is with a charity affiliation. So each micromarket, we affiliate with a major national charity, and we right now we're using the Children's Cancer Society a lot. So we make it clear that the revenue benefits Children's Cancer Society, and we tell the Cancer Society that we're going to give them, if shrinkage is under 5%, we're going to give it to them, to the Children's Cancer Society. So either way, we're going to have a 5% cost, but if they can eliminate it, we're going to give it to the charity. So that gives them an incentive. And then they police each other because they know if they're stealing, they're taking it out of the kids. They're taking it out from the kids, coming out of the, from, they're stealing from the kids.
Yeah.
So they police each other. And then furthermore, we remind them constantly, because every time they check out, after they total, it says, would you like to donate 25 cents to Children's Cancer Society? Yes or no. And if you want, you can slide the little bar to the right. You can donate $1 or $2, whatever you want, or you can say no. But whether they donate or not, they're constantly reminded that Children's Cancer Society is in the picture.
Right.
So anyway, yeah. I think you'll find shrinkage is 0 to 5%. That's what it's going to be. Merchant processing fees are 4.95%. I mean, these are the costs. Product costs. If you look at the products we market, product cost is 40%, sometimes less. We sell cold drinks that cost us 25 to 30 cents. We sold at $1, so that's like 30%.
Right.
But even if you change some of these numbers, even if you if there's any numbers you think could be more conservative, change them. But still, the ROI is almost unbelievable. The you look at this, to make $9,300 a month on a $21,000 investment is crazy. I mean, it's crazy high. And I could misstate it to make it look more believable, but then that's just, I can't make myself do that. What's actually going to happen is we're going to raise the price of the system, for one thing, because right now it's artificially low priced because we need to get new people in the program. And we're going to keep this founder's pricing locked in for the new people. We're not going to raise them. But 6 months from now, new people coming on board will be paying double what you would be.
Right.
To get in, get involved. And
I mean,
even if it was
suppliers lined for everything you're selling, right?
Yeah, we have four ways we go about that. So first of all, when you're getting started, if it's a small operation, the best thing you can do is just go to Sam's or Costco, because they have all the best-selling products, and they've got prices as good as wholesalers.
Well, we were just going through the detail. We're talking about the supply, which your response was exactly what I was thinking about. If you're not doing very big, you just get wholesale, you know, and stock it, you know.
Yeah, well, Sam's and Costco have everything you can need and at great prices, and just pick it up. Well, then when you start ordering from Vistar, for example, then what I would do is rent a climate-controlled storage unit and just have them deliver there, and then use that as your staging point.
Right. And, yeah, and the good news there is I have some other business stuff I kind of work with that I already have for storage, so that always helps. Just based on what I'm hearing, I'm interested taking a look at it.
Tell me what other information you might find helpful right now. Would it be helpful, for example, if I sent you more detail on locations, or what do you need from me?
Probably, yeah, locations. So as I said, you picked the one in the Woodlands. Mine closest to me is 77304, which is more of the Conroe.
Well, let me look and see what that looks like.
I just think about the type businesses that we're talking about. There really has been a big growth up in this area, just east of here, just north of here, because there's more land, you know. Industrial park after industrial park, people moving out. The Woodlands property is so expensive. The first two, a couple of those businesses you were just calling out alphabetically, they come to mind. They weren't really as much of those industrial type businesses, you know, where you got people working on site. And I have some good friends that operate one over here, construction company, you know, where they got just a group of welders working the place the whole time, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, I hear you. So let's take a look at that real quick here and see what we're looking at. And by the way, okay, 77304. Let's see where I, that what that pulls here. Okay, so I see exactly where that is. That's I'm trying to look. See. Okay, so it's that center point is like it's a little bit west of Conroy.
Right.
And I can see the metropolitan area you're referring to. I mean, I can on the map I can see just by the roads and density.
Yep.
So are you saying like maybe the Conroe area, the area that's to the straight east of there and south?
Yes.
Or a bigger area than that?
No, I'm just saying I think it would be a good target for that. Maybe even a better target than the Woodland. It may be even a better target than 77380 was because you got really huge businesses there. You got a lot of professional office buildings and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you have a lot more of that in the Woodlands.
Well, I just took I'm just trying to verify that. What I'm verifying isn't as many as you might think, but I might not be covering the right area. I can identify markets in a lot of ways. I can do zip codes or prefixes, or I can draw irregular shapes and trace out an area, map areas, or use radiuses. So in this example, I took all of Conroe and I included the zip code you talked about. And maybe that's not the best way to do it. Does that sound like a good way to do it?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a bad way. I mean, you know, the way you started before said 10 mile radius.
Okay, well, so should I do a 10-mile radius or a 5-mile radius? I just did a 5-mile radius, and there was 343 businesses. It seems like a low number.
Yeah, that does sound. You could do 10-mile.
Let me do that. Okay, I'm going to do 10 miles now. That's probably going to take in part of the Woodlands, but it's not going to be all of it.
No, it would be the north.
Okay, if I do 10-mile radius, it's going to barely hit the north edge of the Woodlands. There's 804 businesses. 804, but now I got to let me see. And that's by the way, I left my filter in. So those, when I said 300 before or 800, that was only businesses with 20 to 100 employees. So
yeah, so that makes more sense. That makes more sense. Yeah.
Right. So you're right though, and if that's closer to where you live, and that makes sense. Even the 3-mile radius is 300 businesses with, you know, we'll filter that down to 250 or so, but that's a lot of opportunity is the point. And if you already know the market, if they're industrial or manufacturing or with, you've got a lot of I would call captive audiences, you know, where they're not right next door to a McDonald's or a 7-Eleven or a Circle K, right?
That's exactly right.
Right. So we see a higher average sales per capita in those kinds of locations.
Right.
So that's certainly a great area. And by the way, the way I always encourage to look at this and assess it is I like people to be comfortable. I like you to not worry and stress and lose sleep or worrying about whether you did the right thing. So I always encourage people to start small and to verify that the numbers are what I say they are. And when you see that they are, then you'll expand as fast as you can on your own. You don't need I'm not a salesman. We don't sell, you know, we're consultative. When you could start with 10 and you can see the ROI and then you can, so in other words, even if your comfort level would allow you to do set up 100, I would still start with 10 or 20. There's no point. There's no reason to do that.
Right.
You know? I mean, naturally, there's some economy of scale, but still, why do that? It just, for any reason, it doesn't, you don't like it, whether it's, it might not even be about the money. Maybe for some reason it didn't work for you. We make a market for these so we can resell it for you. And that was one of the emails you should have received that explained that.
Yeah, I did. I saw that. Yep.
We don't want anybody stuck with anything they don't want. But less than 1% of our customers have ever asked us to sell or buy out their routes. Well under 1%, in fact. So,
right. And 95% reorder and expand. So it's kind of, we don't mind is my point.
Yep. Well, yeah, I like the concept that I wouldn't have to go far from home to get it established, and I could start smaller like that. And, you know, but the other big target I'm at is I'm not big on leveraging a whole lot, so I want to do the biggest part of everything I can do on cash. I don't want to borrow money to move forward.
That's my I hear you.
Here.
That's very wise, and that's also my preference. And besides, there's no reason to. When you can make this kind of return, you can grow out of profits even without even adding more capital. But if you have the capital, then expansion is a very easy decision, you know, because all you're doing is multiplying what you already know works.
That's exactly right.
Right. Well, if I go back to that, just for fun, I'm going back to my original 3 mile radius, and I'm going to go back to that and see if you recognize some of these companies, just to make sure we're in the right area here. Okay. Now I can go through all of them, but I just want to see. You recognize there's some 99-cent stores. This is alphabetical. A&H Electric, Able Glass, Academy Sports, Alamo Hospice, American Thermal Systems. I mean, there's a lot of them. There's even a Bank of America. That's a good location. Bath & Body Works, Bed Bath & Beyond. You recognize all these or some of them?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Calvary Baptist
They're
Church.
All-
Even churches can
they're
be good. They have some of them have a lot of employees, and they're less likely to steal too.
That's what I say. They're honest places. In fact, I'm involved with several churches up here, and that's one of the first things I thought about. Is in fact, I'm really good friends with the director of the association down here. He has 70 some of the churches in four counties here he deals with.
Mm.
And some camps and stuff that they do. So they're tremendously honest people. Yeah, generally speaking, those are some of the best you can do business with. You know.
Yeah, and you could even specialize in churches for that matter if you wanted to.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, you just go. Yep, but the all those businesses are close by, so. And do y'all know Academy?
The what?
I think it's fairly a regional thing, but Academy Sporting Goods, you mentioned that.
Yeah, Academy
I don't
Sports.
Know that y'all know it. Do you know Academy?
No,
it's an unbelievably growing business. It's unbelievably growing. They got to be. And they're all run sort of in
Tommy. You know a lot about your area, more than I would know, but all I can see is how many employees they have, and it's the general manager is Ben Evan, and, you know, I can see that kind of data.
Yeah.
But so whatever list I would send you, what we could do, we can filter it, or if I send you a list of a couple hundred locations that fit the criteria, then you might want to filter the list and have us target only the ones you know or like, or we could even expand the area and do only churches, for example.
Right.
There's a lot of things we can do. Sometimes we do, like I have a guy that's doing the Phoenix area, and we're doing the entire Phoenix metro area, which is massive, but we're doing only new car dealerships with annual sales over $5 million. And there's about there's a little more than 80 of them.
Right.
But that's another great market to target. Certain demographics some people like more than others. I like the church idea.
Yeah. No, it is.
I got a guy that does only schools.
There's big churches in this area, too. They're not small churches. They're big.
Yeah. Some of them have up to 5 services on a Sunday, and some of them have 1,000 people at each one. I mean, there's some big ones.
50.
I don't know how big yours are.
Staff.
Yeah, and then plus the staff. And you could even let the congregation use them if it's
Some churches even have little cafes and whatnot that are manned with coffee and stuff. You've probably seen that, right?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. You can add a micro market because you know you got a lot of people there. They're not going to stand in line if they don't need, you know, for some things. There's no reason you lose sales if you make them stand in line. So it's
right.
Well, there's a lot of opportunity here. A lot of room for creativity, like you seem to have.
Well, so it interests me to go ahead and try to get kicked off with it and move forward. I mean, I can, as I say, I come from an accounting finance mind, so my mind's always, you know, putting together budgeted, projected numbers and all that. And when I hear this presentation, I'm thinking, well, your target is if you could, as many places as you can get that have about 280, 290 employees, you know, that's, you want the biggest you can get in for the best to start. That would be my concept, but I know it probably didn't work out that way. But.
Well, the bigger you get, the more likely you are to be competing with some very large operators like Canteen, who are, they're targeting 300 and up, usually. 300 is like the bottom end of what they'll do right now. But there's, you could do, say, 50 to 100, there's, or 50 to 200. That's the only, the technology works in those locations. The only difference is in a location with 100 or 200 employees, you're going to have to start off with more refrigeration and more racks because you need more inventory.
Right. Yeah.
But, to get experience, you might want to try 50 to 100 employees with the lower, less investment in equipment. And then from there, expand into larger locations with once you get up to speed, basically.
Well, I'm saying that the numbers would tend to say try to go for the bigger, but to actually get going and get started learning it, I can kind of understand that approach. So I'm the numbers person, you know, that's what I am. That's my background. So,
right,
you don't hit the numbers. You study line. You hit the numbers. You know, plan to check
exactly.
The test. You know?
So there's, I just crunched the numbers. There's some logistics like competition. So, but looking at the ROI, it's more naturally the more sales you can have in one location, the better the ROI. But even though there's more equipment costs. But like if I take that same 3-mile radius and I change it to 50 to 100 employees, that cuts the list down to 52 businesses. So, it be perfectly reasonable to start with that and see who they are real quick. A&H Electric is big. Academy Sports still comes up. Some of them are going to get filtered out, like Applebee's is here. Well, we're not going to put one in Applebee's. Yeah, Conroe Parks and Recreation, Cowboy Kia. I like car dealerships.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of great ones. J.C. Penney's, Break Room, and so on.
Yep.
One of my favorite businesses that would be filtered out, Golden Corral. It's not going to work for us.
Yeah.
First Assembly of God. So anyway, well, how would you like to proceed at this point? If you want to give a shot, what I would encourage you to do is to think of it as a 90-day experiment. Set one up, play it out, see how the numbers work, and then evaluate. And then based on your evaluation, then you could expand from there, and you can decide what kind of demographics you want to go after and how much equipment you want to start with. When you expand,
right?
That seems reasonable.
Yep. That's all I need to know is what I need to put into it to get started, and I just need a projection of that, and then get going and
like you said, it'll prove itself moving forward.
Right, right. And if you look at the spreadsheet, under startup costs, it lists all the costs. This is not what you would write me a check for, but these are the costs, including what you would pay to third parties. It takes about 21 for if you can. And some of those costs are not recurring, so as you expand, your cost per unit would be less.
Yep.
Well, if you're ready to get going, what I could do is send you an invoice that clarifies what the parts that I'm going to bill you for. You want to do that?
Right. Yeah.
And then I will. I'll also list the things we're not billing you for, just so to be clear on that there are other costs and what they are. But those are all listed on the spreadsheet there.
Right.
Your email is wilson23885@att.net. True?
Yeah, that's the best. That's a private one. That's the best one to use because I've been watching it real close. So.
Okay. And do you have my cell phone number? You probably don't yet.
No, I don't think I do.
Is your number that we're 281-832-8845, is that a cell or a landline?
So,
okay, and do you text on it, Mark?
Yeah,
do you text
on that. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so when we hang up, I'm going to text you so that you'll have my number, and you already got James, so feel free to reach out to either one of us with any questions as we move forward. And then, the email, I'll send you an email with the invoice with instructions there. And if you have any more questions, call any time. But then once we get going, then there's a step-by-step process to roll it out. And we make it very simple, and we do most of it for you, but we still like to walk you through what we're doing. But if you want to talk to Ron Joseph, is the guy that handles the locating for us. If you want, I can give you his phone number. You can call him. But whether you do it now or later, at some point you're going to want to talk with him.
Right.
So anyway, first things first, I'll just get this to you first, okay?
Okay. Yeah, whatever it takes to get it off and get it going.
Well, it's great. And honestly, I'm sincerely excited to work with you because you're exactly the kind of person we're looking for that understands business, and you're the kind of person that sees the scalability and then will grow, and that's what we need right now. We have such a huge opportunity. There's over 2 million locations in the United States and no competition. We expect that we won't have any competition at all for probably a minimum of 1.5 years, maybe two. And by the time that happens, we expect to be the leaders in the marketplace. So a lot of times, being the early adapter, right, is the best thing you can do is be first. Right?
That's right. Yep.
So your time is going to be better.
The relationships and the customer service, and then people don't question so much even looking for somebody else.
Yeah, they wouldn't look even if they're approached. It's like with vending machines. If people are happy if they've got vending machines and they're happy with their service, they're not going to be interested in talking with a vending operator who contacts them and says, "Hey, we got vending machines." So when micro markets become more common, first of all, we're going to have most of them. Is my intention. We're going to be the ones operating the majority of them. And if someone from the outside contacts them, the only reason you'd lose the location is if you weren't servicing it well. So if you're in the business, you've got a foot in the door, and then you develop a relationship, and then it's just you keep it forever.
Right.
We have locations we've had for 20 years, 30 years. So.
Yeah.
You get it.
Right.
You ask all the right questions, and your assessments are right on. And I want you to know if they were, and I'd tell you.
Yeah. And I know it's the wave of the future.
It really is. The technology is proven, and it's already completely taken over larger businesses. The only issue is that there's not been good technology for smaller businesses. So the one question you haven't asked me, there's only one question you haven't asked me that I would ask if I were you, and that question is,
Bill, what? Here's the question. What question have I not asked that I need to know the answer to? And you know what? The answer to that, if you ask me, is nothing, because you really have – your questions are so good, you've covered all the important things. So you don't even need to ask.
Yeah, no more questions will come up. I'm a process-focused type person who does a whole lot of this, so usually I don't get too far down the road. I know that those are things that kind of flesh yourself out, you know. You got to take it step by step.
Exactly. There's a principle that you know. Like, for example, a friend, Harv Eker, who wrote a book called The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. You ever heard of him?
Yep.
You have? So Harv says...
I've got several guys I work with that have every book that's ever written, and they can quote almost everybody. So I've heard of a whole lot of them.
You've probably heard it all, but... I'm into that sort of thing. But Harv says wealthy people get started. They just get started, and then they adjust their course as they go. People that have to, you know. So what you just said, I love the way you said it. Is you already know there's going to be things to learn along the way, and there might be some small challenges, but you deal with them as you go. To try to figure them out in advance, just some people will never get started if they have that mindset.
Right.
So, anyway, I'm impressed that you know that. Not surprised, though, with your background. Is that a little doggy I'm hearing back there?
Yeah, I just walked in the house here. My wife's dog trying to impress me. Trying to prove that she's a watchdog.
Yeah, she sounds like, from the sound of her, she's probably a little dog.
Yeah, no.
But little dogs can make good watchdogs.
You're trying to impress somebody.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, I think that's good. I think it's yeah, I'm at the point of ready to move to the next step with it. As I said, it doesn't, of all the things I could look at, it's easy to see that I don't have to get overly extended to start getting into it. So that's...
Yeah.
That's big on my checklist. So,
well, for a business, it's pretty hard to, you know, it's pretty small investment for the kind of potential that there is, as businesses go, as you well know.
You could
build it up to hundreds of locations and sell it for a fairly massive profit once you've got it set up. And you know how that works. You can flip them or start over, whatever you want.
Right. That's like I said, that's what I've been doing for a while now. So, and I already know, as I go into it, I already know some people who would be really good to work with this. So if I wanted to expand it, I got some people that could come along and help, you know.
For outsourcing service work?
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. My personal preference is I like to hire seniors for that because there's so many that, first of all, they're a great workforce, and so many of them are semi-retired or they're retired but they can't afford to be. And then they need more income, and they also just want something to do. And a lot of them are backgrounds in sales and marketing, or they have people skills. It's a very, very high-quality workforce. And I've hired people in their 60s that have been with me 20 years. So I don't know if that's the demographic you're looking at. It doesn't matter, but you know, there's a lot of people to draw upon. Well, anyway, I think we've covered everything important for now. If you think of something, though, reach out, and otherwise, I'll just get this to you, the email and the text, and we'll get going.
That sounds good. That sounds like. I think that's exactly where we are. So I'll be looking for that, and then I'll follow up. And you can count on one thing. I'll ask the questions when they come across. I don't shy back on that. So I know when I have the questions, more questions, I'll ask them. But it's pretty well answered everything I had, at least from the understanding that I had. I know where I am.
Well, that's great. I appreciate it. I want you to ask questions of your questions, how questions are concerned, and also I want you to know that I'm going to do the same. If there's something that I think that's important to address, and maybe you're not thinking about it, I'm gonna let you know, so you don't. You know, I want this to be efficient and profitable, and I want to do everything I can to make that happen.
Wow, exactly right. It sounds good. Well, I appreciate the time.
And my pleasure, Mark. Great meeting you. I look forward to continuing the conversation and working together.
Okay, sounds really good. Y'all have a good one.
Have a good one, Mark. Thanks for your time.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay. Enjoy your evening.
Okay, bye for now. Bye for now.